Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Nice to have you along. I'm Neil Stavem. Glad to host the program here each Monday through Thursday. Ted Ross at the controls, Chris is at the phones. And Ted, we do want to say a special welcome to new listening friends on the new Faith 1290 in Hartford.
It's been 1 week now, a little bit more. We've been on the air out there, so we're grateful for that. And welcome if you're a new listener. In fact, we have a free welcome packet we'd like to give you. Just go to our website, myfaithradio.com. We'll get that in your hands.
And find out all about the Faith Radio Network, and happy to see it grow and expand. And by the way, for those that have been long-time listeners or maybe even just listening recently, we do, as a listener-supported ministry, do rely on your support. And so next week, next Tuesday, our spring fundraiser starts, and that's to essentially take care of the remaining need of our operating budget.
An opportunity to get on board, partner with us in ministry here at Faith Radio. Thanks.
Again, you can find out details online at myfaithradio.com. Ted, I think it was, I'm trying to think of the writer who wrote...
Shakespeare?
Yeah, yeah, no, I was thinking about who said the normal is only a setting on the dryer.
Oh, is that, what was that? Let's see, it's hanging there.
Can't remember her name now. Anyway, so
okay,
you can check it out.
I'm
anyway,
writing that one down.
You're
guys.
Writing it down, but I was thinking because you know when we think about kids, I mean, think well, you know, they're just a normal kid. Well, you know, we all there's sort of different, I guess, levels of normalcy. and some children have diagnoses that puts them maybe on further down the spectrum than the other, and we're going to talk about that today as we talk autism. Autism Awareness Month every April, and so we wanted to focus on that and some other neurobiological diagnoses today. Glad to have you listening in, and you may have a question on this topic, and you're welcome to join us at 877-933-2484, and we're glad to welcome back our good friend Mary Wangren, who is a businesswoman, a wife, a support group leader, and an advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnosis. And she has been volunteering at her church and active in scouting as a mother of two children. Her now 24-year-old son had a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome, and he completed his certificate as an Eagle Scout. And Mary's degree includes a biology degree from St. Olaf College as well as a degree in mammology. And we're just talking that by this time, if you get credit for life experience, that you'd really have a doctorate by now, I think at least.
I think so. I definitely think so. Dr. Mom.
Dr. Mom, there
I'm
we go.
I'm going to try that one when
I speak. she's in studio with us today talking autism. And welcome back, Mary, by the way.
Thank you. Hello to everybody. I'm really excited to be back again, especially Autism Month.
Yeah.
You know, you don't hear a lot about it.
We want to hear more, and there are some aspects of it that we want to focus on. One of the issues of vaccines, we'll talk a little about that, about, you know, new sort of testing DNA, some of those things. But maybe we should talk about the name, Autism and Asperger's Syndrome, which was, as I understand, that's being dropped now. So is there a difference between the two?
Well, it's really interesting that you said that because I've just run up recently myself personally with the fact that there are people within the professional field, whether it be psychiatry or even social workers and school districts, that are not using the word Asperger's because it has been changed on the diagnostic. I think in 2013 it really came prevalent. And the term Asperger's is not being really used because one thing that you guys, Neil, you've heard me talk about is when it comes to Asperger's, every individual with Asperger's is an individual with Asperger's. And so what they've decided that they think they can pinpoint through the new DSM-5, it's the way that they diagnose these individuals, they feel that they are able to maybe pinpoint really a better diagnosis for these individuals, which is really difficult for somebody like myself. My son was diagnosed when, you know, it's been like 14 years he's had this diagnosis, and suddenly you're telling me he doesn't have it. So even when you go online and you still see everything about Asperger's, there's kind of a little controversy because when someone tells you their child has autism, for me, especially when I speak and talk to parents and stuff, it doesn't define a degree. You could say, well, my child has autism 1 or autism 2. But when you say Asperger's, to me, I can absolutely identify some really strong characteristics. So I myself am having a hard time with letting go. I was talking to somebody recently who even indicated that those that have Asperger's and have had this diagnosis for so many years in their life, it is kind of, I hate to say it, it's not a badge of honor by any sense of the word, but it's a way they identify themselves. And it's kind of like, now you're going to take that away. I talked to my son about it. And he goes, Mom, once Asperger's, always Asperger's. And I said, okay, George.
That's it. So we,
yeah.
Well, is the the ability to diagnose these neurobiological the spectrum, I think, on that you call NBDs.
Right.
So let's talk maybe about some indications, because as a parent, I'm sure that you recognize at some point, say, you know, something that doesn't seem in the maybe the normal quote unquote category.
Right. Normal, like the dryer.
Yeah, right. The dryer. So what are those? What are those?
It's
early
really
indications,
interesting. So? One of the things that you're finding is a lot of parents are identifying that sometimes their kids are not maybe developing as quickly as maybe their friends' children are, or their people that they, you know, the play groups kind of thing. One thing that you can tell is just even at 2 or 3 is some of the social skills. I remember when George was just over 2 years old and he did not look he didn't have the eye contact. That's one of the strong indicators. And I kept saying to our medical professional, why isn't he looking at us when we talk? You know, and he kept saying, well, Mary, he's a boy. They don't do it as fast as girls. I know I'm a Scorpio, and that's really important, eye contact, but I don't think that had any bearing on this 2-year-old. But little things like the social aspect, looking at you, smiling, being able to replicate a lot of times. When a parent looks at a child and you smile, they smile back. A lot of maybe this child, your child is not doing that. So there's a lot of indicators that are prevalent, the social aspect. Sometimes what happens with children is they begin to talk and then all of a sudden they become silent. They don't talk and they almost have to go through the relearning of the whole process. So a lot of these are early indicators. And because of that, they are able to, there's kind of a checklist that, you know, the physician or your mental health professionals are able to kind of go through. But as kids, I find it very difficult. I've had parents, I had a woman who once came up to me who said her son was diagnosed when he was 3. But then when he was 7, she said he grew out of it. And you can't grow out of it. You either learn to adapt, the parent, and that's one of the early diagnoses is how the parents work with the kids. They find that the earlier you identify it, the earlier you work with the kids, and there can be some really strong positives. So the characteristics are not so strong as they're growing because they've already learned how to adapt and accommodate.
So you don't grow out of it, but you can, I guess, minimize the impact of it. Is that right?
Right. Okay. You learn to adapt. And the sooner you can identify, that's why sometimes you find where, like in our case, George was identified with and diagnosed with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity, as well as obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. And he was diagnosed with that when he was in first grade. He did not receive his Asperger diagnosis till he was in 7th grade. Okay, does that mean that we were bad parents because we didn't identify? No. What we ended up doing was focusing on all the characteristics, his ADD, his obsessive compulsive, and by working with him so strongly, it was a little bit harder to identify until some strong professionals said, hey, Mary, what do you think? It was his school's social worker. What do you think? He shows some really strong characteristics of Asperger's. What if you get him diagnosed, you know? And then the next day I was out there getting him diagnosed.
Sure. Is that often how it happens, where a school professional or a health professional recommends to you, or do you end up, is it the other way around where you say, yeah, because you talked about, you know, going to the doctor and he said, you know, he's just a boy and that's
right.
So do you have to, Do you have to do advocacy on your child's behalf?
So. Absolutely, you have to be the advocate. One of the things that I have found out is one of the things when you go online, if you have the opportunity to be able to research online and look at, let's say, your clinic or what your health care insurance allows you, look into the different areas of interest that physician has. Example, I have worked in scouting, and I'm a real advocate of talking to leaders, especially if these kids are going to go to a completely different environment, National Jamboree, World Jamboree, long-term camping. And we worked with a physician, and he said, Mary, that kind of training isn't that important. Well, the area of medicine that he was in, his specialty, had nothing to do with adolescence or adolescence with any sort of neurobiological diagnosis. So for him, that really wasn't his forte. And I think that kind of research is really important. If you're going to a pediatrician, you'll find the pediatricians that are very strong and have worked very strong in the community with regards to mental health and NBD workings. That's really important. Along with that, as a parent, you see your child each and every day. You see the progressions, you see the digressions, you see all the different nuances that your child goes through. They don't see that. So, yes, you absolutely have to be the advocate. And I hate to say it, but if you're not getting what you want from a particular physician, it's time to change. And I know that's difficult and it's hard, but sometimes you find at the end it's the best thing, because you will find somebody that advocates. I ended up doing that even within the same clinic with George. We had a great pediatrician, but they had somebody in their clinic who his specialty and his forte was Asperger's and ADD and the medication and the diet, the whole body kind of perspective. And we switched to him, and it was terrific.
Good words, good advice today from Mary Wangren, who is a businesswoman, a wife, a support group leader, an advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with a neurobiological diagnosis or autism. And we are talking about autism today. That is our focus. And we'd love to have you join the conversation. You may have a question or maybe some just experience you'd like to share. We'd love to have you engage with us today at 877-933-2484. That's the phone number, 877-93-FAITH. Or if you want to just submit a question or a comment online, if that's more convenient for you at this time, you can go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. And there's an email link there. You can just use that to send us a note. And we'll talk more with Mary Wangren in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Raising children today, particularly raising children that have a neurobiological diagnosis, and we're referring to the autism spectrum. I guess we can use that word. It's April is Autism Awareness Month. Mary Wangren has been an advocate on behalf of families and children with autism or other NBDs, and provides education seminars to teach and train parents of special kids, and work with schools and churches and civic groups with resources and understanding. And she's joining us today here on Connecting Faith. Our phone number is 877-933-2484, and we'd be happy to have you join the conversation if this is an area that you have particular interest in. We were kind of talking about early indications. There's a lot more sort of diagnostic tests and capabilities now, aren't they? Just getting more advanced. Is that making it better because we're able to diagnose more, or is it just kind of complicate the issues?
Well, I think here in Minnesota, we're really lucky because of the type of medical programs that we have, from the university to the Mayo Clinic to, you know, everything in between. We're very lucky for that. But I also think that even though it seems like things are getting more advanced, you still have to, it still is hours and hours of testing, especially when it comes to the autism. It's their methodology that one thing I think is very interesting is the way they administer the tests. For ADD and different things, they can utilize the computer. They will have the kids take the tests on the computer itself rather than checking boxes on paper and stuff. I think that the diagnostic piece and the observations, that stuff, I think, is getting more and more detailed. And I think that's why this Asperger's terminology is going away, because they feel that they can put these kids in a more defined box by the characteristics that they exhibit.
And it's we're talking about statistically, it's many, many children with some diagnosis along this scale, right?
So. There is. When it comes to autism, it's like one in 68 children are diagnosed. That comes from the Center for Disease Control.
Yeah.
Yes. And Minnesota is supposed to have a higher incidence. And again, it's because of the way it's being able to be diagnosed. The flip side of it is kids that have diagnoses like learning disability, ADD, ADHD, because of those diagnoses, there aren't there isn't the assistance in schools and stuff for these kids, because it seems to be that everybody has a little bit of something. And so it's almost that you have to be on this autism or one of the NBD, the neurobiological type diagnosis, to get any sort of assistance.
And I assume that we are, because of biotechnology, we're getting to the point where these can be diagnosed to some extent pre-born, which raises a whole other issue, doesn't it, in terms of value of a child's life?
Yes, there is. The thing is, genetically, they're not able to determine where on the gene that autism is particularly, but they're able to look at the genetics of like the dopamine transmitters and different things that goes on in the brain. They haven't been able to narrow everything down, but it's not as definite as if you were doing an amniocentesis for like Down syndrome. It's not as strong of an indicator, but there is, I think, some obvious things. And it's interesting because one of the things that we all know as pregnancy, when you're a pregnant individual, the nutrition, the health of the mom, the way she takes care of herself, if she's taking medications during all these things. And that's why it's so hugely important to have that relationship with your medical caregiver, because all these things that they're starting to question, you know, one of the things that you hear about is if mom is on antidepressant medication, does that affect her pregnancy? Is that increasing autism? Question mark. You know, so all those things play a big factor in it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we're learning together here today a little bit more about neurobiological diagnosis, Autism Awareness Month today. Mary Wangren's an advocate, a support group leader, a wife and a mother, and her 24-year-old son had a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome and characteristics of ADD and OCD. And she's joined us in the past to just help field some of the questions. We do want to take a call from Sarah, who's listening in Sioux Falls and Faith 1270 and mental health professionals. So, Sarah, interested in getting your insights. So thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was just calling in because I noticed that you guys talked about how, you know, there was a misdiagnosis of your son, Mary, and, you know, earlier on he had two different disorders, which definitely look, you know, somewhat like autism sometimes. And coming from a mental health perspective, I just wanted to provide some insight. So when I, as a professional, diagnose, you know, that's a way that I can sort of categorize that individual so that future professionals or future people who are working with them know how to, in a quick moment, kind of understand an individual's problems or symptoms and whatnot. But I think what's most important for us mental health professionals is to focus not on that diagnosis, but on the symptoms that individual is experiencing. And so even though your son maybe had these various diagnoses that weren't exactly right for him, hopefully you were able to sort of target those symptoms in any case, and hopefully that didn't kind of put you off track or discourage you at all. And hopefully it doesn't discourage other people from sort of seeking a diagnosis or seeking a mental health professional.
That's a good word. Thank
yes,
you, Sarah.
Sarah, that's absolutely. I think you're. I'm glad you called in because I think that's one of the biggest things is never. I don't think parents need to get frustrated with the mental health professionals like what you're saying is. It's always a tweaking, and I think you're absolutely right. Is focusing more on the characteristics and the symptoms rather than the actual diagnosis.
Did you you've got kind of an initial diagnosis at least with ADD and OCD mm-hmm. early on, and then it kind of through seven years old. So there was a
right.
few years in there. Were you focusing just on kind of those two characteristics, and were the I guess maybe the way that you applied your parenting skills were they the best thing to do in that case for an Asperger's syndrome?
Well, you know what's really interesting is the term Asperger's itself is a relatively new term. When that came out, George was born in 91, and it wasn't until the 90s did the term Asperger's come out. So George missing or not diagnosing him as Asperger's, I think it was so new that it was a matter of who really understood it. I think what we did is we took care of like what Sarah was saying, we took care of his symptoms. We focused on the symptoms rather than categorizing him and putting him in the little box. One of the hardest things, I think, even to this day, is when your child receives a diagnosis like this, a parent is really, I shouldn't say happy, but there is something that is saying, oh my gosh, this isn't my child isn't being naughty because I'm a bad parent. Sometimes people like to label what kids are doing as bad parenting, and or the kids are doing it on purpose. They're disrespectful. They're spoiled. Absolutely not. These kids don't like to act this way themselves. And one of the things that the difference with that is when you work on the characteristics and focus on giving them hints and understanding where they're coming from. I mean, I look back now on the things that we used to do when George was little, and I think, oh my gosh, if I would have only realized. One of the things that I think that as a parent, if I would have realized, like now when I'm at church and you see kids and they're getting loud at church or somebody starts to cry and you see that parent's face, they're stressed. They don't want to bother the people around them, you know. I always try to smile or give them a wink and let them know that, you know what, it's okay, because I was like that as a parent. We didn't take our son to the nursery because he didn't work well in the nursery. And then when he would get loud, it would like you'd stress out about it.
Yeah. Good words from Mary Wangren that we're going to talk more in a moment as we talk autism awareness today. We're going to get to issues of nutrition, and we'll talk vaccines. That's one of the issues that has come up. Also want to talk about where there might be support groups, and I know we've got a website or two that we can give out that would just provide some more resources for you. So you can find out where you could find some support and some help in this area. Mary Wangren, as support group leader, advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnosis. Our phones are open for your calls. You can join the conversation at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And we'll talk more on autism in just a moment here on Connecting Faith.
So fearfully and wonderfully made, how could they say there is no God? Reminded every breath that I take, it's by your hand.
It's 32 past the hour, talking today about autism and other neurobiological diagnoses with Mary Wangren, businesswoman, a wife, and support group leader, and advocate on behalf of those with autism or other NBDs. She provides education seminars to teach and train parents, special kids, and works to bring people together in schools, churches, and civic groups with resources and understanding. She has a degree in momology, and we're thinking it's probably a doctorate degree at this point anyway. And we do have a couple of email questions we'll get to in a moment. I do want to follow up, though. One of our listeners had sent in a question This is Marty calling from Circle Pines and wanted to know a little bit about nutrition and ADHD. Also was looking for support groups, and maybe we just address that because he has a couple of adopted children. Mm-hmm. They both have some neurobiological issues. So support groups first, I guess. Just what do you recommend?
Support groups are awesome. They allow parents to not be on an island by themselves. Mm-hmm. You find out that, oh my gosh, there's other people that are experiencing this thing, and it allows you to laugh and cry and to talk about, you know, what you're going to do next. Sometimes it's hard to find a support group. I think the best place to start is to contact, if you're active in a church, I would contact somebody that is with the children's ministry. I would also, even if you're not active in a church, to maybe go with something that's in your neighborhood nearby. I would also advocate to find out if your doctor would be aware of it, because a lot of times people will let somebody know about it. Even mental health professionals know about support groups. And even if the support group itself is maybe a support group for SIBS or something, getting to know, even if the people that are running that will also know other venues for parents. So absolutely. But like I indicated too, there are not just support groups for parents. There are support groups for siblings, for the neurotypical sibling, because it's really difficult. I mean, George has a sister, and I hear this a lot. I was just talking to somebody recently. Josie's 2 years younger than George, and she almost took the older child perspective. It was very hard growing up because he embarrassed her. When they got into senior high together, he would call her out, you know, across the cafeteria, and, you know, she wanted to crawl under the table. But what's really cool is they've gotten to be so much closer now that she's in college, and it's interesting because if he wants to go somewhere and he wants to wear that right outfit, he doesn't ask mom anymore. Mm-hmm. He asks his sister for her fashion.
Well, he's 24 and out on his own, right? Kind of.
So, well, yes, he lives at home, but he's very working. Independent. He just got his license. Boo-rah.
Yeah,
that was a feat in of itself, and just letting any parent out there realizing that, as we all know, there's highs and lows of parents like this. We sometimes go through sadness, and our steps on our successes are not the same time as maybe our friends or their peers, but. It took third time was the charm, and did it. George claims it was the type of car he drove, but we don't care what it was. He's got a valid driver's license.
That's right.
It was even funny when he had to tell me the score. I said, who cares? Is it a pass? You bet.
Good. That's it. Well, Christy sent a note in online, and she says, our son, now 25, was not diagnosed with Asperger's until he was 23. So this was an answered prayer to have a specific diagnosis. So she said, where can parents go for support, and how to help best help our adult son. Prior to this, we'd gone down all the roads of ADHD, depression, allergies, asthma, et cetera. Have life coaches been a benefit for these situations?
It's funny that I appreciate that question, because that's even an area that I've been thinking of. I think life coaches, if you can find somebody who is a life coach for a young individual that has an NBD or a mental health, I think they're terrific, because what they do at that age is it allows somebody other than mom and dad, I think it allows them to rely and establish a great relationship. And life coaches, sometimes as parents, our expectations, and we all know this, our expectation is, you know, 6 feet high, when maybe we should be looking at it at 3.5 feet high. And sometimes that life coach helps us all level things out. Definitely seeking support. If it's a new diagnosis, sometimes even that I found when George was first diagnosed, and I hear this from other parents as well, sometimes it's good to even seek out a life coach or even a family therapist. Or even it's getting to be the point I'm finding even in my church, we have some new young ministers that they really like to work with kids in the mental health. They like to work with kids that have Asperger's and autism, and it allows it's another whole new venue, because even though we're answered, those prayers are answered and you're happy about it, it is a lifestyle change, because you've been looking in one direction and suddenly you've got to go another one. And sometimes working with professionals in that way is really beneficial.
Well, maybe getting back to Martin's question just about nutrition, and he's talking about ADHD, but maybe just say a word about nutrition in general.
Nutrition is a really big thing. It's been something that's been very prevalent. A lot of people talk about kids that have NBDs, almost a lactose intolerance type of a diet. You have people that get rid of the flour and the grains. A lot has to do with, again, talking to your physician or talking to a nutritionist. It's also the healthy diet. When your child is hungry, you don't have the cookies, don't have the donuts, go for the snack of fruit. One thing you find, too, is if individuals – like with George, we have chosen medication. And so George starts getting hungry around 5, 6 o'clock at night. But when he's really hungry, it's like 8, 9 o'clock at night when most people don't want their kids grazing in the kitchen. And that was one of the really hardest things early on we had a problem with. You make dinner, you think everybody's going to eat enough. And then 2 hours later, your son's saying, I'm starving. One thing I was told by our mental health professional as well as the doctor said, as long as he's eating healthy food, let him eat when they're hungry. So that's one of the most important things is, you know, fruit and vegetables and meat and protein and stuff like that. But I think, again, seeking, there's a lot of books, there's a lot of stuff online, but it also, again, working with your healthcare professional.
Yeah, we'll take Angie's call in just a minute, but I was thinking, I mean, it sounds as, you know, parent, we like to have things structured, but sort of in this situation, you have to have, your child needs life structured, but you
absolutely
probably have to have a little more flexibility. Don't you?
You really do. You really do. I mean, they're very rigid and rule bound because that's how they operate in that world. Because when you think about it, their internals is very discombobulated. So on the external, they want to have it very organized. The sad part is they're organized to their self. It's kind of like my husband and his workbench, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean? It's like when you always say, oh, I just cleaned up my desk. Now I can't find a thing. That's sometimes with our kids, you know, mom, don't touch anything because I know where it all is. But we do need to be flexible. That's one of the things that I learned as a parent is I was raised one way, but now I've learned to shut the bedroom door.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, which probably you're a lot healthier too. Probably
all right. I am. Drugs are good too.
Sure.
No, I'm just kidding.
Let's take Angie's call. Angie's calling in from Janesville, listening to Faith 1190. Angie, go ahead with your call.
Hi, I am so pleased to hear Mary's comments. I guess regarding Asperger's, as I have a younger child. So it's nice to hear that there is hope when they get older.
Oh, thank you. Yes, there is. And it gets so much fun, you're not going to believe it.
But I have a child that is non-diagnosed at this point. He has the symptoms. He also has anxiety and ADHD, which are diagnosed. So he is on medication for that. But I just want to make a comment regarding, I don't think a lot of parents, I know in the state of Iowa it's this way, but I don't think a lot of parents realize that unless you have a diagnosis, mm-hmm. First of all, medical assistance is impossible mm-hmm. to get. And then now, I guess the University of Iowa and other doctors they have taken away the Asperger diagnosis altogether. Now they're just diagnosed as ASD on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. It's a spectrum disorder, period. So you don't actually get the Asperger separate. And so To basically disclude the state assistance, they are now saying they have sensory processing disorder or expressive language disorder because, like, with disabilities like Down syndrome, you know, they know kind of within the realms what the medical billing is going to look like, you know, where with Asperger's and autism, it's so broad. So they are now basically, which is kind of sad. I mean, if you don't have good private insurance, you know, unfortunately, you aren't going to get the assistance that these kids need.
Absolutely. And I have to agree with what you're saying, Angie, is the fact that it's really sad because in the scouting world, We talk a lot about it, and I had this big discussion about it on a national level because of the term Asperger's. And I was just telling Neil about a year ago, we came out with a video that I'd been working on for like 4 years, and we used the term Asperger's in this video. And a healthcare professional had said to me, Mary, you know, we can't endorse it because you're using the term Asperger's. And to me, the Asperger's is more defining. And the hardest part about it is we now are calling basically anything the neurobiological stuff is the invisible. And the invisible disabilities are so doggone tough. And I absolutely agree with Angie, because when it comes to state assistance, unless, I hate to say it, unless you call 911 and you end up having to get your child in the system, it's very difficult, because people think that they're functioning so well because if they're not giving anybody problems per se, it's very hard to define what they really need. And it's interesting that Angie also said about the Down syndrome. That's the sad part, because I talk a lot about this, is sometimes you know, in the world out there, people will see children with Downs or somebody that's in a wheelchair, or and they kind of know how to approach these people. And it's the kids with the invisible. The expectation is when they see a child that appears to be neurotypical, they expect the same thing. And in actuality, they're not going to always get it. And I know that even having the ADD-ADHD diagnosis can be very difficult in getting any sort of assistance. And I think you're right that parents need to understand it. And that's where, you know, pursuing it. But it is one thing that I find interesting is there are healthcare professionals out there that are willing to help get that next diagnosis so that assistance can be given.
Yeah. So assistance that may become a bigger and bigger issue, of course, as healthcare costs go up. And
oh, yes.
Certainly an area where you know, we need some advocacy probably in terms of our legislators too, right? Our representatives,
right,
in this area.
And, you know, the sad part about it is, and I think we all know this, but sometimes it's hard to get advocacy for things that people are not really familiar about. And it's, I don't mean to make it sound mean or harsh or anything, but if you don't necessarily live with somebody that has a neurobiological diagnosis, it's very difficult to really understand. It's like when I talk to people and they say, oh, yeah, I have a nephew like that. Or, oh, yeah, I have a friend of mine who has a child like that. And it's like, oh, yeah, you got to live with it 24 hours to really see what goes on. So that's hard. And that's hard to get advocates for that, too.
We're talking gaining some understanding on autism today, another neurobiological diagnosis, with Mary Wangren, who's a businesswoman, a wife, a support group leader, and an advocate. And she is a dedicated volunteer to her church and in scouting, and mother of two children. And both have had some diagnoses that have affected her parenting styles, and giving us some wise advice. She does have a degree in momology, so we're getting that expertise today. We're going to take more questions and comments coming up in just a moment. You can join us at 877-93-FAITH. Or you can drop us a note online if you go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there to submit your question or comment. We'll talk more in just a minute. Mary Wangren about, you know, the challenges of parenting a child with autism or one of these diagnoses. And you just reminded us that your helpful tip for today is don't put your Christmas presents out early, right?
Absolutely. You just do it 3 days before. They can't stand the anticipation.
Otherwise, because yours got opened up at one
they
point.
Did. Yeah. They did. Yeah. And as you know, you have to laugh at these stories. But one thing you'll find with kids with NBDs, they – even though some people will maybe claim me different, but they don't really learn to lie. But when they open their gifts, they just let them stay there. And I had to teach my son, if you're going to sneak, you got to rewrap it and put it back.
Sure.
Because it's as exciting for mom to know that you're happy about this gift. Rather than tell me 3 days before, take it back, Mom. I want a different kind.
So don't leave the Christmas gifts out early. Anyway, let's go to Scott in Sioux Falls. Scott, you're on with Mary Wangren. Go ahead with your comment.
Hi, Scott.
Hi. Thanks for the fine job you guys are doing today. I guess I just wanted to make a comment of encouragement and a reminder to everybody that all of these kids are different. They're individuals. Our son, our eldest, was diagnosed with ADHD when he was in first grade living out in California with us. And we went through probably a fairly standard procedure of tests and medications and psychologists and everything like that. And then when we got back, and he was functioning very highly in the mainstream school system, we got back here to South Dakota and went to a different counselor, and this mountain decided that we needed to be very aggressive with the school system. We needed to go in and get an individual educational plan, or IEP as they called it here, mm-hmm. and demand that the school system wrap itself around to try and fit our son. And I disagreed with that very strongly. I said, you know, this might work very well as long as he's in the public schools, but when he graduates from high school, he's going to go out into the world, and the world is not going to wrap itself around the axle to fit him. I said, you know, let's encourage him in his strengths and get him everywhere he can be within the system. And he did pretty well grade-wise. He was very good in music, vocal and instrumental music, and that was kind of his anchor for the time through school. And he's had a few highs and lows and rough spots afterwards, but now, at age 30, he has an associate's degree, he's married, he has three wonderful boys, and a good job.
Good.
And it's not been a bed of roses for him, but he understands himself as best he can, and he's just really willing to work with that. And he's very good about talking to us about things now like he wasn't necessarily when he was younger. But it's just been a joy and a source of – it's a real praise for the way that things have come together for him.
Yeah. Scott, thanks for that good report. And
I think it's absolutely just fantastic that you shared that, because I think sometimes when – parents are, I remember when my son was younger, you just wondered if what was going to happen. And I think this is such a positive to hear about, you know, where your son is at. And I think it really is important that you said a really mouthful when you indicated the fact that the world won't wrap your hands around your, you know, they won't wrap their arms around your child because of these different things. And it is important for them to understand that not everybody's going to get them. And that's but it's really interesting, because I think as the older they get, the more, and when I say older, I'm talking late 18s, early 20s and stuff, they start to realize some of that stuff.
Yeah. And hopefully you can maintain good dialogue and conversation. So let's answer Lisa's question, because she said, my 12-year-old son recently received an ASD diagnosis. Besides social skills training and OT, occupational therapies, do you have recommendation for other therapies?
Well, it's totally, again, up to you. I think it's important for him that he feels that he's got a safe place that he can talk about some of if he runs into some situations that he's not really happy about, a place that is neutral. I think that's really important. I also think it's important, and maybe he already is, but is – involved in like sports or choir. One of the things that I'm an advocate, because Neil, you know this about me, is I'm a real advocate for the Boy Scouts of America. And because in that organization, it's citizen building. It's a citizenship building. It's an organization that gives you life skills. And what it does is it gives you a lot of other things that you just normally wouldn't go out and grab. And organizations like that, 4-H is really a good time, because what it does is it gives them an opportunity to interact with a lot of neurotypical kids. And it also allows them to interact with neurotypical kids who maybe they don't go to school with. So there's a whole different perspective sometimes on these kids. I hate to say it, but sometimes it's good to get away from the kid you go to school with.
Yeah. Yeah. Good word.
I think you're doing a great job with having him in social skills training. And I think that's a terrific.
Question from a listener. She wants to know, says, I have a son with Asperger's. What's your opinion of on mainstream versus special schooling? Sort of Scott kind of addressed that a little bit, I guess. But was George in main school all the way along?
George was in a public school all the way along. It wasn't until he got into the middle school that when he got diagnosed with the Asperger's, we did have an IEP for him. But he did attend mainstream classes.
An IEP is an
individual education plan.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
And that was really beneficial. It all depends on one of the things that I guess that I have to say about it is the size of the class and the success of your child. If your classes are getting too big or you don't feel like you're getting the individualized attention, you know, maybe there's other alternatives. I've had people talk about their child being in private schools and that the school just financially could not give the advantages and help that they needed. So the parents found that public schools were better. Again, that's a total individual. I think you got to check out every opportunity. I went to a small college. People go to big universities. You know, it just is individual.
Before our time gets away, we did want to talk a little bit about vaccines. That connection with autism has been debunked,
yes. But
it's still out there. Right?
It's still out there. People still will ask. There's organizations out there who still like to muster up that dust. But in actuality, that whole concept of vaccines was a study that was man-made, and the results were man-made, and the individual is out of Great Britain, and it was basically deduced that what he found was basically all made up, and it's not true. And he was his medical license was even removed, and it was all false. And so, no, they still don't know how and why our kids are like they are. But, you know, everybody has their opinion, but vaccinations is not one of them.
Yeah. So we've got a couple of minutes left. You talked about support groups. Maybe there's, I don't know if there's a final statement you want to make sure that we get across today, but if there's a website or someplace that you recommend, or where do you find help and hope when you need it?
Well, you know, that's a good question. When I am looking for information, of course, the internet is a place to go. Oh. And you know what they say, you can believe everything that's on the internet,
sure.
Right?
Yes.
And you can find pretty much everything that you want. But I think one of the biggest things to understand is that I guess I feel that's important is sometimes as parents with kids, both neurotypical as well as kids with diagnosis, we don't always step back and just watch them and realize that. And I know this is one thing that we've talked about before is how can you tell what the child is doing is a product of their diagnosis or if they're being a kid? You know what? It is what it is. And step back, watch your child. You may find out that they're doing the same stuff that the neurotypical kids are. Take a time and hug your child. Appreciate for who they are. You know, if they sing, encourage it. If they play music or sports, what we need to do is just not always. I know that for me, it was really hard to let go of the diagnosis and just enjoy my children. And I have to say that that's one thing I wish every parent would do is no matter what your child's diagnosis is, step back, enjoy them, love them for who they are because they're going to grow up and they're going to be like Scott's kids and everything's going to come out and you're going to say, wow, why didn't I?
Yeah.
Stop and smell the roses and your kid's hair.
All right. Good word from Mary Wangren with her degree in momology. Good advice, no matter what our kids' diagnosis might be. Mary's a businesswoman, a wife, a support group leader, and an advocate for families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurological diagnoses. And you could check out a website, autism.lovetoknow.com, as a site that you might want to look at. An easy one to remember, autism.lovetoknow.com. And again, as Mary suggested, you know, check in with your church staff.
Absolutely.
And your pediatrician, your mental health provider, your educator at school. There's a lot of resources available if we just ask.
Right. And that's the question. Just ask.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Good to have you on. Mary
Wangren
joining us today. If you missed part of the show or want to pass it on to a friend, you know, all our interviews are posted online and they're all shareable. So You just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. You'll find the podcast right there, and you can share it with a friend. And thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.